continues. Well, now on Radio 4, it's time for the classic serial. Paul Reddy stars in the final episode of Evelyn Waugh's satirical World War II masterpiece, Sword of Honour. Guy has remarried his former wife, now poor and pregnant, with another man's baby. In a time of barbarism, it was Guy's wish to do a single, unselfish act. But after receiving new orders, he finds himself flying to Italy on a secret mission. Episode 7, Unconditional Surrender.
The knee Guy injured during parachute training was now recovered, and he found himself posted to Bari on the Adriatic coast, where he was to act as a liaison officer. He had only just arrived by aeroplane, and already he felt homesick. Not for England or Virginia, rather for the Italy he had left in 1939, and once called home.
Guy Crouchback.
Hmm?
I didn't know you were here.
Oh, I thought you knew everything about everyone, Luke. Will you join me?
Well, just for a few minutes. I'm meeting some people.
Nobody quite knew what Lieutenant Padfield's wartime role actually was. In England, he'd made it his business to ingratiate himself at the highest levels, and did so with great success.
Oh, I wouldn't recommend the food. I'm afraid you'll be on English rations. If you're lucky, then maybe some local red wine.
Loot had also played a role in Virginia's recent divorce and consequent penury. From London, the American had informed Mr. Troy of his wife's various indiscretions.
Guy, I've been very remiss.
Hmm?
Well, I meant to write to congratulate you and Virginia.
Oh.
I read the notice in the Times when I was staying with the Stitches in Algiers.
Right.
Before leaving England, Guy had remarried his former wife, now poor and pregnant with another man's baby. In a time of barbarism, it was Guy's wish to do a single, unselfish act.
What are you doing out here, Lute? Or is it hush-hush?
No, not at all. Opera. We're trying to get it going again. It's the most direct way to the Italian heart.
Even during a war?
When better? See, singers are the problem. So many of them seem to have gone off with the Germans. Will you excuse me, Guy? I've just seen the people I'm supposed to be meeting.
Certainly.
No doubt we'll run into each other again.
In London at that moment, there was being enacted a scene of traditional domesticity. Virginia was staying with Guy's uncle Peregrine, and while she made her layette, sewing neatly and happily, Peregrine read to her from Trollope's Can You Forgive Her?
Never, I hope, never. He did not press her further then, but kissed her and bade her farewell. Now, chapter 4.
I finished my lessons, you know.
Lessons?
Instructions. Canon Wells says he's ready to receive me any time now.
I suppose he knows best.
I can't see why novelists make such a fuss, always writing about characters losing their faith. The whole thing's as clear as daylight to me. Peregrine.
Yes?
Will you be my godfather? And that doesn't mean a present. I mean, at least nothing expensive. After all, it's really you who brought me into the church, you know.
I? Good heavens. How?
By being such a dear. You do like having me here, don't you?
Yes, of course, my dear. Shall I read some more?
I've been thinking I'd like to have the baby here.
In the flat?
Do you mind?
Won't it be rather inconvenient?
No, not for me. I think it'd be cosy.
Cosy?
You can be godfather to the baby, too. Only, if you don't mind, if he's a boy, I shouldn't like to call him Peregrine. I think Guy would like him to be called Gervaise, after his father. Don't you?
Cozy.
Major Cattermole?
Yes?
Captain Crouchback, sir.
Ah, yes. Close the door and take a seat. Balliol, 1921 to 24.
Were we up together?
You wouldn't remember me. I led a very quiet life, but I remember seeing you. You were a friend of Sligger's, yes?
That's right.
He was always very nice to me, but I was never in his set. I wasn't in any set. Wasted my time as an undergraduate working.
I do remember you. You used to speak at the Union.
I tried. I wasn't any good. So, you're going over to Yugoslavia.
Am I?
That's what it says here.
Right.
I envy you. I came out in the new year and the doctors won't let me go back. I was there for the 6th offensive, but I crocked up and they had to carry me for the last 2 weeks.
Oh, sounds tough going.
Partisans never leave their wounded. They know what the enemy would do to them. We ate all our donkeys in the first week. By the end, we were surviving on roots and bark.
How did you get out?
Aeroplane picked me up with the rest of the wounded. Didn't you have a rough crossing from Crete?
Is that in my file too?
Oh, yes. Did you get hallucinations?
Yes.
So did I. You've made a better recovery. They say I'll never be fit enough to go into the field again. Just stuck in an office briefing other men. Well, let's get on with it.
Right.
Yeah, help me unroll this map, will you? How briefed are you on the various enemy factions?
Not terribly well, I'm afraid.
Well, apart from von Reich's army group, there are 5 or 6 divisions of Serbian Chetniks and Croatian Ustashi, all fiercely nationalistic and all at each other's throats. And then there are the Bulgarians.
The map shows a high proportion of partisans.
Yes, but they're up against 500,000 of the enemy. The Russians have sent in a mission at last. Now, this is something I have to emphasize to all you liaison officers. The Yugoslav partisans accept us as allies, but they look on the Russians as leaders. It's part of their history. We are foreigners. They're the ones doing fighting and dying. Some of our less sophisticated men think it's all politics.
I see.
I'm sure you won't make that mistake, but I deliver this little lecture to everyone. There are no politics in wartime. Just love of country and love of race. We're soldiers, not politicians.
Yes, sir.
Our job with the partisans is simply to do all we can to hurt the enemy. How the Yugoslavs choose to govern is entirely their business. Got it?
Sir.
Good. Well, whatever it is they're sending you out to do, you're in for a unique experience. The partisans are a revelation.
Every day, Guy reported to headquarters, only to be told, no news yet. He wandered the streets of Bari as a tourist. Then, one morning, he was informed that an aeroplane would take him to Croatia that night.
Welcome to Bagoy, Captain Crouchback. I'm Bekic, your translator.
Hello.
Get in, I'll take you to headquarters.
Oh, thank you.
Watch out!
Take it easy. It's okay.
We were quite close to that wall.
You got any Croat?
Not a word.
Better I translate. Everyone knows Bekic. They trust me, eh?
Right.
Guy had been forewarned not to keep confidential signals and not to say anything in front of Bekic he didn't want repeated.
You speak good English?
Ah. American English. I live in New York before war. You been in New York?
No. My wife lived there for a while.
Ah. I was political exile back in the 30s.
Oh, my God! Oh,
take it easy!
As a liaison officer, Guy's duties were to transmit reports on the military situation and to pass on partisan requests for medical supplies, artillery, typewriters, even an aeroplane.
Come in.
Then, one morning in mid-April...
There's the Jews outside.
What Jews?
They've been there 2 hours, maybe more. I sit to wait.
What do they want?
They're Jews. I reckon they always want something. They want to see the British captain.
Well, ask them to come in.
There's more than 100 of them.
What? Oh. I'll come out.
My God. Where have they come from?
Croatia, Yugoslavia, Bosnia, Hungary, maybe some Italians. I tell them they better speak Slav, yeah?
Does anyone here speak English?
Yes. Yes, I do, Captain.
Very well. You'd better come with me. I shan't need you, Bekic.
You're the boss.
Please, sit down. Madame...
Kanye.
Kanye. My name's Crouchback. I'm a liaison officer here. Can you tell me where you've all come from?
I am Hungarian, but we are all survivors of the Italian concentration camp. In 39, my husband and I were on our way to Australia. Our papers were all in order, and my husband had a job waiting for him in Brisbane. The war changed everything.
For us all?
For some more than others.
Yes.
When the king fled, the Ustashe began massacring the Jews. The Italians rounded them up and took us to the Adriatic. When Italy surrendered, the partisans held the coast, but not for long. When the Germans moved in, the partisans fled, taking us with them, and here we are.
How many?
108.
Congratulations.
Captain Crouchback, we are starving.
Yes, I just meant that you are amongst friends here.
Is it true the British and Americans are friends of the partisans?
Of course. That's why I'm here.
It is not true that the British and Americans are going to take over the country.
No, first I've heard of it.
But it is well known that Churchill is a friend of the Jews.
I'm sorry, but I don't see what that has to do with it.
We want to go to Italy.
Madame Kanye.
Some of us, we have relations there. Get us to Italy, we'll be no more trouble. 3 aeroplanes will take us all.
Madame, those aeroplanes are carrying essential war equipment. They're taking out wounded and bringing in supplies.
Yes, but look. Look at me. Look out there at the others.
I'm very sorry you're having a hard time, but so are plenty of other people in this country. You know we've got the Germans on the run now. By Christmas, we may be in Zagreb. Bakic! Yes. I want these people to have cocoa and biscuits.
How many biscuits?
I don't know. 2 or 3 each.
Captain Crouchback, please, will you come and see the place where they put us?
I'm sorry, madame. It simply is none of my business. I'm a military liaison officer, nothing more.
Guy watched as, with tense self-control, each person took 3 biscuits. One man, a grocer, asked permission to take one for a friend. He had tears in his eyes as he sniffed the cocoa. Once he had handled sacks of the stuff.
Signal from United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration, sir.
Research team requires particulars. Displaced persons report any your district.
Aren't we all displaced persons?
I don't think we count. Send this reply. Friendly nationals moved by enemy. 108 Jews. Send it right away.
Sir. Reply to your reply, sir.
Ah, thanks. Expedite details, Jews' names, nationalities, conditions. Get back, Itch. Tell him I need him to take me to where the Jews are quartered.
Sir.
Are you sure this is right?
Sure, sure.
What is this place?
It was school before bombing.
There's not a pane of glass in the windows.
We're going through here.
Right.
My God!
What do you want me to tell them?
Say the Americans in Italy want to help them.
Americani in Italia, vogliono mi pomici.
I have come to make a report on what they need.
Guy stood surrounded by 30 or more, all asking frantically for whatever came first to mind. A needle, a lamp, butter, soap, a pillow, a passage to Tel Aviv, an aeroplane to New York, news of a sister last seen in Bucharest.
Please, please, one at a time.
You see?
One at a time, please.
They all want something different, and this ain't the half of them.
Where's Madame Kanye?
Her husband works on the electric light, so they got a house in the park.
Let's get out of here and try to find her. Excuse me.
The Kanye's house was a former potting shed hidden by shrubs from a public park. Guy told Bakic to wait in the car.
Madame Kanye.
Shh.
Can we talk?
My husband is asleep. He worked all night and we only have one room.
It's a nice day. We can talk out here.
They sat on a park bench and Guy proceeded to tell her the news.
So, what can the Americans do for us?
Well, I'm not entirely sure yet. Oh,
but we are of no importance. Yes, you told us so yourself.
That's not quite what I said.
You must see the commissar. Otherwise, he'll think there is some plot going on.
I'm sure he won't.
He will, I am telling you. We can do nothing except nothing without the Commissar's permission. You will only make more trouble for us.
No, all right, all right. But can you produce the list they want in Bari?
Yes, if the Commissar says so. Already, my husband has been questioned about why I have talked to you. Well, he was very upset. The partisans were beginning to trust him. Now they think he is connected to the British. Believe me, it is better you do nothing except for the Commissar. I know these people.
At the Commissar's headquarters, Guy and Bakich were ushered into a smoke-filled room. Guy was faced by three military men. They sat in a huddle across a large table, skin weathered by exposure.
The generals want to know why you go visit the Jews today.
I was acting on orders from my headquarters.
He asks, why are the Jews the concern of the military mission?
They're the concern of the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration, UNRWA. They must begin to calculate what will be needed to put ravaged countries back on their feet.
The Commissar don't understand how this concerns the Jews. This is internal matter.
So is bridge building.
The Commissar says bridge building is a good thing.
Well, so is helping displaced persons.
The Commissar and General say questions of internal affairs should be addressed to the Minister of Interior.
Look, I'm sorry if I have acted incorrectly. I merely wish to save everyone trouble. I was sent a question by my superiors and did my best to answer it in the simplest way by visiting the refugees in person. May I now request a list of the Jews?
The general does not understand why a list is needed.
And so it began again for a further hour until Guy lost patience.
Very well. I will report that you refuse to cooperate with the United Nations.
The Commissar says he will cooperate in all necessary matters.
Yes, but with specific regard to the Jews?
It must be decided by the central government whether that is a necessary matter.
We've clearly reached an impasse today. I'm now going to report back to my headquarters. Thank you, gentlemen.
On June the 4th, 1944, Allied troops entered Rome, and Virginia Crouchback gave birth to a son, christened Gervaise. As the first doodlebugs began to fall on London, Guy's sister Angela came to visit.
I must say you're looking very well, Ginny.
Oh, thank you, darling. Uncle Peregrine's been a great help.
Really?
He's been terribly sweet, sort of fussing around me. Hasn't got a clue, of course, but that's what we're paying Sister Jenkins for.
When ours were born, Arthur was hopeless. He used to move out and run away to Bellamy's till it was all over.
No, that's where Peregrine is now.
Have you heard from Guy?
He sent a telegram.
Do you think you ought to go and check on Gervaise?
No, Jenkins is with it.
Oh, we'd better go down to the shelter.
It's bound to be another doodle bug. They're very tiresome.
We're going to the shelter, Jenny! You'd better bring the baby!
The V1 air attacks were quite different from the Blitz. No enemy was risking his life up there. It was as impersonal as a plague, as though the city were infested with enormous venomous insects.
When are you going back to the country?
Tonight.
Do you still have old Nanny living with you?
Yes.
Well, see, the thing is, I don't really need Sister Jenny anymore, so I was wondering if old Nanny would look after it.
Gervaise?
Yes.
Oh, she'd probably love to. The trouble is, we've still got half the British Museum all over the house, so we simply haven't got room for another adult.
Oh, no, I don't want to move. I'll be fine here.
Oh, I see. Yes, that was wonderfully unselfish of you, Virginia.
Well, I just really think it's best for it. For Gervaise, I mean.
Guy could not dismiss the Jews from his mind. He felt compassion, less than he had felt for Virginia and her unborn child, but a similar sense that here again, in a world of hate and waste, he was being offered a chance of doing a single small act to redeem the times.
Signal for you, sir, from headquarters.
Let's have a look. Excellent. Central government approves in principle the evacuation of the Jews. They want me to dispatch two representatives on the next plane to discuss the problem with UNRWA.
Is the Commissar going to be happy about that, sir?
There's not much he can do about it.
But the Commissar vetoed Guy's request to send the Kanyes on the grounds that Mr. Kanye's electrical expertise was indispensable. Instead, another couple were chosen, and Guy saw them off at the aerodrome.
Good leader!
Yes?
I've got papers for these people to be flown to Bari.
They'll have to wait while the last lot disembark.
Right.
Are you Captain Crouchback?
Yes.
I've got a jeep coming out in a minute.
For me?
For your major.
Well, I haven't got a major.
Haven't I told you? They're supposed to have signaled that one was coming.
Well, do you know his name?
They never tell me names. He came in with a little gang on my last flight. I'd better check the fuel and rations are going to the right place.
Right.
Guy Crouchback.
Oh,
I'd hoped you'd be here.
Hello, Frank. I haven't seen you since paratraining. Are those Major's crowns?
I'm afraid in the whirligig of war, I've become your commanding officer.
Congratulations, sir.
Be a good chap and see to the stores, will you? I've got a night's talking ahead with the general staff and the presidium.
The what?
I'll tell you about it tomorrow. We're going to make history here, Guy. Captain Crouchback! You can tell your people I'm ready to take on passengers.
Right.
Evening, sir.
Evening. Major D'Souza's joining us tomorrow. He'll be taking command. Sort out a room for him, will you? And he's got some bags in the jeep.
I'll bring him in, sir. The mail's arrived.
Better leave that for the Major.
There's two personal letters for you.
All right. I'll take them to my room.
One letter was from Virginia, the other from Angela. The former was undated, but had clearly been written some 6 weeks earlier.
Darling Guy, it is born, and I am feeling fine, and everyone, especially Angela, is being heavenly.
Sister Jennings says it is a fine baby. Gervaise has been baptized already. Eloise Plessington, who, believe it or not, is now my great new friend, was godmother, and darling Peregrine, godfather. I've made a lot of new friends since you went away. In fact, I'm having a very social time. Well, I hope you're enjoying your foreign tour, wherever you are, and forgetting all the beastliness of London. Ian Kilbannock talks of visiting you. Longing for you to be back. Virginia.
Angela's letter was dated a month later.
Dear Guy, I have dreadful news for you. Perhaps I should have tried to telegraph, but Arthur said there was no point, as there was nothing you could do. Well, be prepared. Virginia has been killed. Peregrine, too, and Mrs. Corner, his housekeeper. One of the new doodle bombs landed on Carlisle Place. They were all killed instantly.
The news did not affect Guy greatly, less indeed than the arrival of Frank D'Souza, and far less than the departure of his two Jewish protégés.
The baby is with me. It was Virginia's idea that I should have Gervaise and keep him safe.
Guy recalled their recent marriage, the registrar's office, the honeymoon at Uncle Peregrine's flat.
We think we shall be able to get Virginia and Peregrine taken down to Broome to be buried there, but it's not easy.
Still hobbling on his injured knee, Guy had returned to bed, where Virginia joined him, and with gentle, almost tender agility, adapted her endearments to his crippled condition. She was, as always, lavish with what lay in her gift.
I had a mass said for them here this morning. There will be another in London soon for friends.
Without passion or sentiment, but in a friendly, cosy way, Guy and Virginia had resumed the pleasures of marriage.
I won't attempt to say what I feel about this, except that now, more than ever, you're in my prayers. You've had a difficult life, Guy, and it seemed at last things were going to come right for you.
When Guy had left England and Virginia, he felt as though he were leaving a hospital, a place of grateful memory to which he had no particular wish to return.
At least you have Gervaise. I wish Papa had lived to know about him, and I wish you had seen Virginia these last weeks. She was still her old, sweet, gay self, of course, but there was a difference. I was getting to understand why you loved her, and to love her myself.
As a duty to his wife, Guy donated a tin of bully beef and some bars of chocolate at the local church, then explained to the priest that his wife was dead.
Her name?
Virginia. I've written it down for you.
Virginia, like the Holy Mother. Your wife Catholicus?
Yes. Will you pray for her, Father?
Yes, my son. Dominus tecum.
The Lord was also with Guy's sister Angela as she sheltered under a table with Eloise Plessington in her little London house, listening to a doodlebug passing overhead.
Oh, dear Lord.
The two women had known each other since childhood. Charles Plessington came of the same little band of landed recusant families as Angela, but she confounded the matchmakers by preferring the Protestant and plebeian Arthur Box Bender.
Oh, Angela, it's a terrible thing to admit, but whenever that happens, I pray, please God, don't let it fall on me.
Oh, who doesn't?
But that means, please God, let it fall on someone else.
No, not necessarily. It might land on Hampstead Heath.
One ought to pray, please God, let it fall on me and no one else.
Oh, don't be a goose, dear.
Eloise married Charles and became not only a Catholic, but a very busy one. Her sons were well married. Her only family problem was her daughter, Domenica, 25, who had failed her vocation in a convent and now drove a tractor on the home farm.
Poor Virginia. I'd got very fond of her.
In the old days, I couldn't understand what Guy saw in her, apart from the obvious. But since the baby was born, I'd grown fond of her too.
Will Guy mind awfully?
Who can say? The whole thing was very puzzling. You know, she begun the baby before they were remarried.
So I supposed.
I really know Guy very little. He's been abroad so much, living in Italy. I always imagined he'd completely got over her.
They seemed happy enough together that last bit.
Virginia knew how to make people happy if she wanted to.
And what's to become of my godson?
I suppose I'll have to look after him. Arthur won't like that at all.
I've sometimes thought of adopting a baby, a refugee orphan or something like that. The empty nurseries seem a reproach when there are so many people homeless. It would be an interest for Domenica, too. Take her mind off swill and slag.
Are you proposing to adopt Gervaise?
Oh, not adopt. Not give him our name or anything like that. Just to look after him until Guy gets back. What do you think?
It's wonderfully kind, and Arthur would be immensely relieved. I'd have to ask Guy, of course.
Of course. Here comes another of those beastly bombs.
Just pray. Just pray. Please, God, let it be a dud and not explode at all.
Your quarters all right, sir?
We can dispense with the sirs over lunch, Guy. Till a few days ago, I was living in a cave in Bosnia. Still, we'll have to spruce things up around here. We've got a distinguished party coming.
Oh?
I put the general and the commissar in the picture last night.
Perhaps you'd put me in the picture.
It's a very pretty one. An oil painting. Mm-hmm. What with the presidium, everything's moving our way at last.
What is the presidium?
The new government.
Oh.
Officially, it's temporary and they're a scratch lot. Two are duds we had to take on as part of the deal with the Serbs. Of course, the real power will remain with the partisan military leaders.
Then what's the point of the presidium?
It's really for foreign consumption.
Oh.
This is highly confidential, but Tito's in Italy. Guest honour at Allied HQ, and it's on the cards he's going to meet Winston. If he does, he'll run rings around him.
Who'll run rings around whom?
Tito round Winston, of course. The old boy has no idea what a trained politician Tito is.
Well, so's Churchill.
He's an orator and a parliamentarian, that's quite different. All we have to do now is square the Yanks. Some of them are still a bit shy of left-wing parties. Not the president, but the military.
Hmm.
So they're sending a General Spitz here to report back how hard the partisans are fighting?
Well, as far as I know, they aren't.
They will when the Yanks come. You wait and see.
Yes, what's worrying me the most is the refugee problem.
Oh, yes. The Jews. I saw a file about them.
I managed to get two sent out to Bari. They're going to report to the Relief and Rehabilitation Admin. So I just hope they get the proper attention.
They will. The Zionists have their own funds and their own contacts with the UNRWA and Allied HQ. Oh. Anyway, it really isn't any of our business.
Oh, well, that's just what the Commissar keeps saying. You talk like a partisan.
I am a partisan guy. The fact is, we've more important things to think about than these sectarian troubles. You look disapproving.
Yes, I've got to know some of the Jews. I've seen the conditions they're living in.
And don't forget, I'm a Jew myself. So are three of the Bracta members of the Presidium. My people have been a valuable anti-fascist propaganda in America, but now's the time to forget we're Jews and remember we're all anti-fascists.
Yes, I can't feel like that about Catholics.
Can't you? You should try.
When Guy went to church next morning, he was watched by two partisans.
Corpus Domini Nostri Jesu Christi, custodiat animam tuam in vitam aeternam. Amen.
What's all this about you and a priest?
All what?
You've upset the Commissar.
Have I?
You've made a formal complaint.
Because I went to Mass.
That won't have helped, but no. The complaint says you've been guilty of incorrect behaviour.
What?
They say you've been seen giving rations to the priest.
Just some bully beef and a few bars of chocolate.
You were also seen passing a note.
I gave him the name of my... of a relation who's died. It's what we call a Mass intention. I asked him to pray for her.
And that tallies with the priest's story. You know the old boy's been cross-examined.
But, no!
He's lucky not to be in prison or worse. How could you be such an ass, Guy? They searched the presbytery and found nothing incriminating except chocolate, which they confiscated, but they're still suspicious. If it wasn't for General Spitz's visit, they might have made real trouble. But I pointed out that if the American general finds the church shut and the priest removed, he might report back that this isn't such a liberal democracy.
Well,
that did the trick, but I can tell you they took some persuading.
Well, thanks for that.
I said yesterday, this is no time for sectarian loyalties.
You wouldn't call communism a sect?
No, Guy. No. By the way, we're going to put on a show for the Yank General.
You mean Enser?
Not that sort of show. We're staging an assault on an enemy post.
I didn't think there were any Germans in the area.
There aren't. But there's a garrison full of Croat nationalists on the road to the coast.
No.
Did you know there's a rule that our VIPs always travel in pairs?
No.
Well, there is. And you wait and see who we're getting from our lot.
Who?
Actually, Guy, I think I'll keep it as a treat for you.
In her last letter to Guy, Virginia mentioned that Ian Kilbannock intended to visit him. An RAF officer, Ian was in charge of press at hazardous offensive operations. At Bari Aerodrome, he was waiting to board a Dakota that would fly him, General Spitz, and an assortment of VIPs across the Adriatic to where Guy would greet them.
Congratulations, Ian! I hear you're to be the first journalist allowed into Yugoslavia.
Are you coming on this Beano loot?
I'm accompanying Sir Elmeric Griffiths.
Why are they sending an orchestra conductor into a war zone?
We're hoping he'll be able to help the partisans put on a concert. We should be able to board as soon as they've finished photographing the top brass.
Good God!
What?
I've just seen a ghost. It's Brigadier Richie Hook having his picture taken with General Spitz.
It's now Major General Richie Hook.
Wearing shorts, bush shirt, and a red banded forage cap, Richie Hook shuffled with a limp, reaching out his maimed right hand to steady himself against the aeroplane, his single eye, once full of menace, now lusterless. The halberdier warrior had become a grey-faced old man.
He's on the shelf. All I can find for him to do is play second fiddle as an observer. Excuse me a moment, Ian. I think I should get Sir Elmeric into one of the photographs.
In the hot afternoon, Ian's shirt had been damp with sweat. Now in the chill upper air, it clung to him and set him shivering. The Dakota's windows had been blacked out. With the lights extinguished, they flew high over the Adriatic in complete darkness. Ian sat in black boredom until sleep came.
Ian!
Huh?
Hmm? We're coming into land.
Right. Thanks. I hope there's some food.
Yeah, I haven't had a thing since lunch.
Oh, that doesn't sound right. We're going back up.
Jesus!
Ian!
Are you okay?
I don't know. I think so.
You there! Yes, sir. You, sir. RAF. Were you driving this thing?
Driving, sir?
Are you the pilot? Why can't you look where you're going? You're under arrest.
Is that your Batman, sir?
What? He's going back into the plane.
Dawkins! Come back here!
It's like the croquet match in Alice.
That's a very, very gallant act.
It's coming back out.
What the devil are you doing, Dawkins?
It's your police, sir. Trousers on fire, sir. Permission to tighten them up, sir.
Permission granted.
That's fair roasted, sir.
Were there any men left inside?
Yes, sir. I think so, sir. They ain't moving, sir.
Are you hurt?
Yes, sir. I think so, sir, but I don't seem to feel it.
Shock. You will later. Who's missing?
I don't see Elmerich.
How did any of us get out?
General Spitz, he got both hatches open before anyone else moved.
Do I take it you are not in any way responsible for that intolerable exhibition of incompetence?
No, I'm a press officer, sir.
Oh, I thought you were a pilot. In that case, you need not consider yourself under arrest.
Thank you, sir.
But be careful in future. This is the second time this has happened to me.
Ian, are you hurt? No, I don't think so.
Come on, lean on me. It's not far.
I'm sorry about Virginia.
Thanks. Did you get hit on the head? Come on. Not far now.
All right.
Guy had known Richie Hook from the Halberdiers and the glory days of Hook Force, but not in his recent decline. When they met again next morning, the Major General was as he had always been.
Crouchback, I'd like you to arrange for me to have a quiet talk with a fellow whose name ends in itch.
All their names end in itch, sir.
No, decent young fellow. They call him a brigadier. The one who's going to lead the assault on the enemy garrison.
I'll see what I can do, sir.
Oh, good man.
Guy arranged a meeting between Richie Hook and the ferocious young Montenegrin, who also lacked an eye and a large part of one hand. There was an immediate affinity between the two warriors.
Oh, well done, Crouchback. Sir. Rattling good fellow, that itch. No flannel or ormolu about him. Mind you, I don't suppose there's a grain of truth in half his stories. We had a perfectly foul drink together. That ended in itch, too. Extraordinary language. Anyway, we parted friends, and I've attached myself to him for tomorrow.
For the attack on the garrison,
yes,
sir.
But don't tell the others. Itch hasn't room for more than one tourist in his car. We're driving out tonight to make a recce and get the men in place for the attack.
sir, there's a certain amount of humbug about this attack. It's all being laid on for the American general.
Don't teach your grandmother to suck eggs, Scratchback. Itch and I understand one another. It's a demonstration. Sort of thing we did in training. But we enjoyed that, didn't we?
Oh, yes, sir.
As if there's any fun going, Itch'll be in it. Between you and me, I reckon it's the last chance I have of hearing a shot fired in anger.
At 8 next morning, Allied military, partisan leaders, translators and observers all assembled beside a line of miscellaneous cars the Yugoslavs had kept secreted in the forest.
How are you feeling, Ian?
Oh, Guy. Not bad, thanks.
Good. Who are you travelling with?
Schneifel, General Spitz's photographer.
I suppose this makes you a fully-fledged war correspondent.
Well, between us, I'm hoping I might get a book out of it after the war. That's why I'm cozying up to Schneifel. I want to get copies of any good photographs.
Right, that's the off.
Where's Richie Hook?
He's travelling under separate cover. See you there.
The convoy set out through a terrain of rustic enchantment, and in less than an hour they were in sight of the enemy garrison. A place had been chosen 500 yards from it, well screened by foliage, where the observers could await events in comfort and safety.
It's like driving to a meet when the horses have gone on ahead.
Where's your photographer friend?
Gone down to get a closer look.
Not tempted to go with him?
And to be honest, I'm still feeling a bit jaded from the plane crash.
Hello, Guy.
Oh. All well. So far, sir. Major D'Souza, you know Wing Commander Kilbanuk?
Yes, you're writing this up.
That's the idea. How's it going down with your American general?
At first, he was under the misapprehension that we were attacking a German garrison rather than fascist collaborators.
Was he disappointed?
He said they're all the same, and he was impressed that we'd achieved the element of surprise. The important thing is that he sees the need for American support.
Well, if you'll excuse me, I'll go and ask if he'll give me a few words while we're waiting for action.
Right. Between us, Guy, things have not gone quite right.
Oh?
One of the brigades lost its way. They may turn up in time, but we'd better not let on.
The sun rose high, but it was cool in the shade of the observation post. The signal for the infantry to make their move was an air attack timed for 10 o'clock. But at 9:30...
What the hell are they up to down there?
Someone's jumped the gun.
Partisan runner said they're all out shooting at themselves.
What?
Bloody hell.
Back it! Find out what's going on.
Okay.
A bloody chaos, that's what.
I heard a brigade got lost on the way here. That's not going to look too good when we're trying to impress General Spitz.
Well, let's keep it to ourselves and make sure he doesn't find out, shall we?
I speak to Partisan Rana. They say when brigade who got lost arrive, first brigade think they enemy and start shooting.
No, terrific. Any casualties?
I go find out.
Oh, we've lost the element of surprise.
You could say that.
There was no longer peace in the valley. Shots came, some from the fascist garrison, some from the partisans. Then, at 10 o'clock sharp, two aeroplanes came screaming out of the blue sky, swooping down one after the other.
Oh, he's missed the garrison.
We've got men in those woods.
The next one's coming in.
Lovely job. Bang on time. Bang on time. Oh, have a look through your binos. They've made a nice big hole in the wall.
Is that it?
Now the infantry can do some work.
I just hear Commissar talk to an American general.
Yes?
There's a German column on the way, so attack is postponed.
Oh, no.
That's that, then. Well, we'd better organize some luncheon for our visitors, Guy.
Right.
They've seen all the support we have to offer.
Look!
What?
Down there, two of our lot making for the garrison.
Guy raised his binoculars and saw the unmistakable figure of...
Richie Hook!
The old warrior was signalling fiercely, summoning the men behind him who were already slinking away. Only Schneifel, the photographer, followed like a terrier, or the pet dwarf privileged to tumble about the heels of a Renaissance prince. He gambled round the Major General with his camera, crouching and skipping, small and agile enough to elude the snipers on the walls.
What does Richie Hook think he's doing?
The first bullet hit him when he was 20 yards from the walls. He spun completely round, then fell forwards on his knees, rose again and limped slowly on. Schneifel paused long enough to record the great man's dying posture, then bolted, plunging back into the ranks of the retreating partisans. The death of Richie Hook had changed the events of the day from fiasco to tragic drama.
Why are these people moving furniture?
The captains and the kings depart.
They don't hang about.
Hey, careful with that bag.
Thanks for your hospitality, gentlemen.
It was certainly eventful.
Odd thing is, I've only twice had any part in an operation and both have afforded classic stories of heroism.
You played a role in Trimmer's rise to glory.
Yes, you wouldn't have thought Trimmer and Richie Hook would have a great deal in common, would you?
I took it upon myself to inform Richie Hook's batman. He's been with him from the outset. How'd he take it? According to him, on more than one occasion, the Major General had said he wished the bastards would shoot better because he didn't want to go home. It seems he got his wish.
I'll make a note of that for future reference.
Oh, don't forget to speak to Schneifel. He was very excited about his photographs. Reckons he's got a scoop.
I'll have a word with him on the flight back to Bari. See you gentlemen around.
Goodbye.
Good flight. Mission accomplished.
Yes?
General Spitz has been pretty sceptical about the partisans' skill at guerrilla tactics. Then Richie Hook stepped in and changed everything.
I suppose once they've got supplies, they'll be able to mount a summer offensive.
There's not going to be a summer offensive. Not here in Croatia.
No?
They'll keep on the heels of the Germans and move into Serbia before the Chetniks can take over. I have a feeling I shan't be staying long either. Can you face a winter alone, Guy?
I'd like to do something about the Jews.
Yes, your Jews. I'll signal HQ. Find out what's going on.
One evening towards the end of September, Frank D'Souza came to Guy in the officer's common room to announce his imminent departure.
I told you Tito had run rings around Winston. He's gone and joined the Russians. So from now on, the partisans will get any help they need from them and the Bulgarians.
The Yugoslavs hate the Bulgarians' guts.
Not anymore. The Bulgarians have, as Churchill might put it, found their souls. I don't think you'll have a very busy winter. In fact, they might close this mission down before Christmas. Don't worry, I'll leave you the jeep.
Oh, thanks.
And you can have all the American magazines they sent over from Bari.
On Guy's 41st birthday, he received a present. A signal from Italy reading, "Receive special flight 4 Dakotas tomorrow night 29th. Dispatch all Jews." It seemed to him that he was playing an ancient and historic role. Moses leading a people out of captivity. That day, Guy's cuckold's horns shone like the patriarch's when he came down from the awful cloud on Mount Sinai.
Evening. Captain Crouchback.
Squad leader.
Come to see if you're refugees.
Yes. They all present?
Huddled over there on the embankment.
Yeah.
Mostly asleep. We've got a bit of a problem.
The ground mist.
Yes. It's been getting thicker for the last 2 hours.
Will they be able to land?
Not a chance. In fact, I'm just sending the cancellation order now.
Right.
Twice in the next 3 weeks, the grim scene was repeated. Then came the first heavy snow, which ruled out any more landing till spring. HQ sent a special drop of relief supplies, but this only caused resentment amongst Allied military and partisans alike.
What's the idea, Crouchback?
Idea, sir.
I've just been having a hell of a schmozzle with the air liaison, comrade, about tonight's drop.
I signalled HQ to suggest it was injudicious to discriminate in favour of the Jews.
Well, now he wants everything checked in the presence of the Minister of the Interior and put under joint guard. Never heard such rot.
The trouble is, the supplies are coming from a private source, so they don't come under military aegis.
Yeah, someone at Bari is playing politics as usual.
Mm.
Belgrade fell to the Russians, Bulgarians and partisans. The next day, the Jews received their supplies. A few days after that, they disappeared.
What's happened to them, Bakich?
I guess they've been moved to some other place.
Why?
Well, people make trouble for them.
Who?
Partisan people that ain't got no coats and boots. They make trouble with the commissar, so the commissar moved them on last night.
Moved them on where?
They have what's suitable.
Guy's recall papers came through. Shortly before leaving Begoy, he found himself back in the public park, feeding broken biscuits to a squirrel in the snow.
Madame Canyon!
Here, let me help you carry that.
No, no, please.
I insist.
Here. Very well. Thank you.
You have not gone with the others?
No. My husband is needed for the electrics.
Ah, of course. Where have the other Jews gone?
Yadovna.
Where?
You've not heard of it?
No.
It's a labor camp.
What?
The Germans and Ustashi kept Jews, gypsies, communists, royalists. Before they left, they killed what were left. Now the partisans have found new inhabitants for it.
For the first and last time, Guy crossed the threshold of her hut and placed his load in a corner near the little stove. He had a brief impression of orderly poverty, and then he was outside in the snow again.
Don't lose heart. I'm being recalled to Bari. When I get there, I promise I'll raise Cain about this.
Oh, you are a good man, Captain Crouchback.
Well, you've got plenty of friends over there. I'll explain the whole situation to them.
Thank you.
We'll get you out. I promise.
Abdayushin, you've been followed.
Have I?
Your translator.
Bakich.
Over there, by the trees. Trying not to be seen.
He can't make any trouble.
Not for you, perhaps. You are leaving. There was a time when I thought all I needed for happiness was to leave. Our people, we feel that. They move away from evil. Palestine, Italy, just to cross water, like crossing the Red Sea. But is there any place free from evil? It's too simple to say that only the Nazis wanted war. The communists wanted it too. It was the only way they could come to power. Many of my people wanted it. to be revenged on the Germans. Even good men thought their private honor would be satisfied by war. They could assert their manhood by killing and being killed. Were there none like that in England?
God forgive me. I was one of them.
Guy's last act in Beaugoy was to send Madame Cagney the illustrated American magazines Frank D'Souza had left him. At length, in mid-February, the British force withdrew. Guy was set ashore at Brindisi and drove up to Bari. It was after he'd first gone there and Major Catamol was in charge.
So, you'll be returning to the UK?
Yes. I wonder if you can tell me, sir, the Jews.
Your displaced persons?
Yes. Do you know what's happened to them?
Escaped.
Really?
An American charity shipped over a convoy of brand new Ford trucks to Trieste. They got the Jews out and left the trucks as a tip to the partisans. Oh,
that's wonderful news.
Yes. Your refugees are now here in Italy. A real parting of the Red Sea.
Would it be all right if I visit them?
Well, I don't see why not. Venir Lecce.
Guy seconded a driver and they followed the coast road south to Brindisi before swinging inland to Lecce. The Beaugoy Jews were back behind barbed wire, along with 400 or 500 others, collected from various prisons and hiding places. They were all old, all baffled, all in army greatcoats and balaclava helmets. Guy talked to the camp commandant.
I can't see the point to them being here.
Not quite agree. We feed them, doctor them and house them. That's all we can do.
But why are they here?
No one wants them. The Zionists are only interested in the young.
Then what's to become of them?
I suppose they'll just sit here till they die.
Are they happy?
They complain a hell of a lot, but they've got a hell of a lot to complain about. It's a lousy place to be stuck in.
Yes. I am particularly interested in a married couple called Cagney.
Yes, I've checked my list, but they're not here.
Good. That probably means they got off to Australia.
Well, not from here, old man. I've been here all along. No one's ever left. I'll put the word out amongst the Beaugoy intake. See if anyone knows what's happened to them.
Thank you.
Guy returned to Bari with the knowledge that the Cagneys were taken off the truck by the partisans just as it was about to leave. The day before he was due to depart, Guy had a visit from an officious little officer called Gilpin.
Before you leave, I'll want your security pass back.
I'm afraid I've lost it.
That'll be very awkward.
Not for me. I've a friend in air priorities.
I hear you've been making inquiries about a couple called Cagney.
Yes.
I've seen their confidential report, if you're interested.
I am.
The woman was the mistress of a British liaison officer.
Nonsense.
He was seen leaving her home when her husband was away on duty. They were a thoroughly shady couple. He was guilty of sabotaging the electric light plant.
He kept the place going.
They also found a whole heap of American propaganda in their room.
I gave her some picture magazines.
You're lucky you didn't find yourself on a charge.
What happened to them?
They were tried by a people's court. You can be sure justice was done.
Only once in his military career had Guy been tempted to strike a brother officer. On that occasion, it had been Trimmer. The temptation was stronger now. But before Guy had done more than clench a fist, the sense of futility intervened. Guy had come to the end of his crusade. His life as a halberdier was over. In 1951, to celebrate the opening of a happier decade, the government decreed a festival. Monstrous constructions appeared on the south bank of the Thames. The foundation stone was solemnly laid for a national theatre. But there was little popular exuberance among the straitened people. Bellamy's Club alone retained some traces of happier days. It was here that Guy's brother-in-law, Arthur Boxbender, found himself at the bar with a colleague. Both men had lost their seats in the 1945 election.
Evening dress, Arthur. Do you still go out?
I'm throwing a party for my daughter.
She's 18. Oh, something you had to pay for, that's different. It's being asked. I never get asked anywhere now.
Well, I don't think you'd like this party.
No, of course not. But I used to get asked to dinners, embassies, that sort of thing. Well, so did you.
Yeah.
There was a lot of rot talked, but it did get one through the evening. Somebody told me your brother-in-law made a killing on his house in Italy.
Guy? Yes. He finally sold the Castello.
Who on earth can afford to buy property in Italy now? Americans, I suppose.
Actually, it was an American. A chap called Lute set it up, but the buyer was a fellow guy I knew in the army, a writer called Ludovic.
Not the one who wrote The Death Wish.
Yeah. Have you read it?
I tried. Absolutely. Tosh!
By all accounts, it sold nearly 1 million copies in America, and they've just made it into a film, so he can't afford to live in England anymore.
I was sorry to hear about Guy's wife.
Yes, all very sad. You know he's remarried.
No?
Domenica Plessington. Nice girl. Old friend of the family. She manages the home farm at Broome and looks after Virginia's boy.
Yes, I heard about that.
Yes, well, these things happen in war.
What happened to the father?
Captain Trimmer, the people's hero. Huh? Yes, well, by all accounts, he was an awful man. Disappeared abroad, last heard of in South Africa.
Probably for the best.
Yes, and now the dust has settled, things have turned out very conveniently for Guy.
In Sword of Honour, Episode 7, Unconditional Surrender, Guy was played by Paul Reddy, Virginia by Lydia Leonard, Ian Kilbannock by Oliver Chris, and Kirsty by Polly Frame. Brigadier Richie Hook was Tim Pigott-Smith, Frank D'Souza, Joel McCormack, Bakich, Chris Pavlo, Madame Kanye, Mia Sotiriou, Lute, David Seddon, Uncle Peregrine, John Rowe, Angela, Priyanga Burford, Arthur Box Bender, Robert Dawes, Eloise, Carolyn Pickles, Dawkins, Michael Bertinshaw, Major Catamol, Arthur Hughes, The Priest, Sean Murray, Squadron Leader, John Norton, and The Orderly, Harry Jardine. The narrator was Tim McInerney. Sword of Honour was dramatised by Jeremy Front and directed by Tracy Neal.
This is BBC Radio 4. After the news, Margaret Drabble joins Mariella Frostrup to discuss her latest book, The Pure Gold Baby, while Sebastian Foulkes and Helen Dunmore discuss how the tragedies of the First World War continue to influence authors. Open book in a couple of minutes.